This week, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin is in Tel Aviv as more than 2,800 are killed in the first 7 days of the Israel-Hamas war.
Well, Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin wanted to stress to Israel that the United States has your back.
Polish voters must choose between two contrasting parties in parliamentary elections set for October 15th.
The coalition trails the Law and Order and Justice Party by just several percentage points.
And with a looming government shutdown, Republican Steve Scalise ends his bid to become House Speaker, leaving the chamber still unable to function. Join us on the Voice of America as we explore the issues in the news. Hello, I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. Friday morning, Israeli tanks and military vehicles were seen moving in southern Israel ahead of an expected ground invasion into Gaza after a devastating attack by the militant group Hamas. The scene unfolded as Israeli warplanes continued pounding Gaza in retaliation for the weekend attacks by Hamas militants that killed more than 1,300 Israelis, mostly civilians. The Israeli Defense Forces on Friday also intercepted dozens of missiles fired across the southern border with the Gaza Strip. The sky in southern Israel was filled with traces of missiles intercepted by Israeli forces. Military hardware, including tanks, were stationed at the field as the missiles flew over them and were intercepted. In addition, the Israeli military sent an evacuation order to civilians in Gaza City in the north. While the original message was in Arabic, the Israel Defense Forces spokesperson, Lieutenant Colonel, relayed the message in English in what he said was the IDF's effort to minimize civilian casualties.
The IDF calls for the evacuation of all civilians from Gaza City, from their homes, southwards, for their own safety and protection, and to move to the area south of Wadi Azza.
Lieutenant Colonel Conricus added that people will be able to return to Gaza City only when another announcement permitting them to do so is made.
In the following days, the IDF will continue to operate with significant force in Gaza City and will make extensive efforts to avoid harming civilians.
Conricus says there are significant ongoing combat operations and the IDF is preparing for future combat operations as well.
There are civilians here whom are not our enemy and we do not want to target them. We are asking them to evacuate so that we will be able to continue to strike military targets belonging to Hamas in the Gaza Strip.
Heeding the announcement, residents in Gaza City were seen carrying their belongings and driving packed cars in an attempt to flee. There are more than 1 million people in Gaza being asked to relocate. The Gaza Strip itself is home to 2.3 million and is a narrow and densely populated swath of land measuring 40 kilometers in length. Hamas militants have killed more than 1,300 Israelis, mostly civilians, and about 1,800 Palestinians already have been killed in retaliatory attacks. The United Nations warned that so many people fleeing en masse would be calamitous, and Hamas, which staged a shocking and brutal attack on Israel this week, dismissed it as a ploy and called on people to stay in their homes, adding to the widespread panic. VOA has continuing coverage of the Israel-Hamas war 24 hours a day on our website at voanews.com. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said Friday the Pentagon was ready to deploy more military aid to Israel as Israeli forces prepare for a likely invasion of Gaza in response to a devastating attack by the militant group Hamas. Austin made the comments at a news conference in Tel Aviv with his Israeli counterpart, Yoav Gallant.
I am here in person to make something crystal clear. America's support for Israel is ironclad. And I extend my deepest condolences to the Israeli people for those killed or wounded in this terrible slaughter by Hamas. I'm also here in solidarity with all the families still living the waking nightmare of not knowing the fate of their loved ones. And we will continue to coordinate closely with Israel to help secure the release of the innocent men, women, and children in the clutches of Hamas, including American citizens.
Emphasizing that Washington, as Austin put it, has Israel's back, and that is not negotiable. For more on the Secretary's trip to Israel, I spoke with VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb.
Well, Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin wanted to stress to Israel that the United States has your back. Those were his exact words to the defense minister today. He was reaffirming the U.S. support and saying that the United States is there for Israel because Israel has the right to defend itself for its own safety and protection. All that said, though, there is an air of caution because Israel is preparing for what a lot of analysts and experts expect will be a ground invasion in the coming days. And so Austin did caution that this is the time for resolve and not revenge, purpose, not panic, security, not surrender. So even though while he is saying Israel absolutely has the right to defend itself, he's putting the underlings to say, let's make sure this doesn't go overboard because there are a lot of civilians in Gaza right now. And while he did not directly address that, you can tell by his tone and his rhetoric that that is also on the back of his mind. There's been a shipment of U.S. munitions, precision-guided munitions. We're talking about small diameter bombs that have arrived. Iron Dome munitions for their air defenses are also being sent to Israel. We're going to expect more of that in the coming days. Maybe even today, there has been a shipment that has arrived in Israel today, but they have not said exactly what is in that shipment at this point. At this point, don't look for U.S. boots on the ground. While there is a small U.S. embassy contingency that is supporting Israel as it's looking into hostage rescues, there has not been a massive amount of U.S. troops sent into Israel to help with this war. Israel is a very capable military. Israel is a very strong military. They have hundreds of thousands of people in their reserves. They do not need U.S. boots on the ground. So it'll be more and more aid and support for Israel. And then on the flip side, the U.S. is also sending a lot of deterrence to the region to be there should it be needed, and should any other actors like Iran, for example, or Hezbollah, for example, tries to take advantage of this situation.
And is there a concern that this violence will spread to other parts of the region?
There is a concern, and that is why Secretary of State Antony Blinken is rushing around the Middle East today. I mean, he's in Jordan. He's going to be later in Bahrain. He is talking to Mahmoud Abbas in Jordan, the Palestinian leader at the West Bank. He is trying to connect with every U.S. ally in the region to calm them and say, do not panic over this situation. Do not make things worse. And stress also to the enemies in the region, like an Iran or Hezbollah, don't get involved in this as well. That is why you see this massive warship, the USS Gerald R. Ford, the biggest and baddest warship in the U.S. military's arsenal, sitting in the Eastern Mediterranean at the ready to launch airstrikes should a major conflict break out in the region. That is why you've seen a squadron of A-10s from Arizona has arrived in the Middle East theater to be there in case extra air power is needed. Other U.S. assets are also being put into the region. I've heard announcements of F-15s and F-16s, F-35s as well. So the U.S. is putting in a lot of power to make sure that anybody who thinks that this is the opportunity to cause an even bigger war needs to think again.
VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb. While families of Israeli hostages are desperately seeking answers regarding their safety of their loved ones, as Israel continues to pound the Gaza Strip, Heather Murdoch, VOA regional correspondent and Istanbul bureau chief, was on the ground outside of Jerusalem when I spoke with her about the desperate situation of civilians.
For civilians in where I'm standing right now, the Israeli side, a lot of the southern Israel has been evacuated, and people who are still there are living mostly inside, sometimes underground if they can. And quite afraid and quite tense. I mean, there is just near constant battle. We just came from a bit further south, closer to Gaza, and there was fire from both sides that, I mean, we were there for an hour and it pretty much didn't stop. A lot of the fire from the Gaza Strip coming into Israel is caught by the Israeli Iron Dome, you know, their famous air defense system, but not all of it. There were rockets that landed in a nearby city, Ashkelon, today, and the death toll continues to rise to more than 1,000 on both sides. So civilians are basically afraid and so, so angry. I've covered a lot of wars. I've been covering wars for 14 years now, and I have never been in a war where civilians were so angry at the civilians on the other side and using language of annihilation for their enemy.
What are people saying about the hostage situation?
The situation of hostages, Israeli hostages in Gaza, has changed a bit today because there were about 150 known hostages or believed to be hostages yesterday. Now some of the people that were believed to be hostages are now confirmed dead. There was a man we spoke to yesterday whose niece was missing from a kibbutz right next to the border with Gaza, and she went missing and her friend and neighbor was taken hostage and later was set free for no reason. And so they assumed the niece was with them, but actually they found her body when they uncovered many other Israeli bodies and the bodies of Hamas fighters in the kibbutz today. The hostages that are believed to still be in Gaza and still be hostages are still missing with very little information. And, you know, every day, the prospect of getting out alive is worse, and the prospect of getting out untraumatized, of course, is not even a possibility at this point. There's also a lot of anger and fear of that. But I also don't want to forget that the people inside of Gaza, the civilians there, and we spoke to some of those today too, while they're not hostages in the traditional sense, they are literally trapped inside the area. And while the Israeli government says to the civilians, you should leave, this is what you should do, there's nowhere to go. There's no border that's open. So they are also trapped in this terrible situation as well.
Yes. And also President Biden confirmed that U.S. citizens are among the hostages captured by Hamas. What is reaction on the ground to the U.S. hostages?
Well, from the Israeli side, when they talk about the hostages and the so many nationals from so many countries being among them, it in some ways boosts the claim of righteousness. You know, both sides in this war feel like they are in the moral right. And when something like this happens, then not just to Israelis, but people all over the world have been taken hostage, it stands as proof that these actions were terror and not military. However, this is, you know, a really unfortunate part of this war in that the civilians aren't really fighting the war. And they really, like, I spoke to a bunch of men from Gaza today, and they really wish that that hadn't happened. Why do they have to do things that are just anger and destroy the conscience of people all over the world? It's actually, you know, a horrific act for people on both sides.
Looking at this humanitarian crisis that is growing there, is humanitarian aid getting through?
As far as I know, really nobody's getting through. The border is destroyed, and there's a lot of rumors going around about the southern border with Egypt, whether anything's going in or out. And as far as I know, no, but there's rumors that some things are going in, and there's also legendary tunnels going in and out of Gaza, and Israel has told the public that they have destroyed tunnels from time to time for decades. So as far as I know, the tunnels may not even be operating, and there may be no aid going in at all. We spoke to a woman in Gaza today who said that they were getting some aid from UNRWA, the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees. The food they have is basically bread, water, and canned food. It's very limited. Families are trying to buy food themselves, but there's also no money getting in. I was speaking to men who were trapped outside of Gaza because they work in Israel. And when the war started, they were outside. Now they're trapped outside and there is not any method for them to send money back. And they said that their wives and their children and their parents were asking, you know, send something. But not only can they not find a way to send it, they can't get it because their work permits have all been revoked without warning. So all of them are unemployed and not even legally allowed to be in Israel. So they're just waiting in the West Bank, which is also the Palestinian territory.
That was VOA regional correspondent and Istanbul bureau chief Heather Murdoch. You're listening to Issues in the News. I'm Kim Lewis. Republican House Majority Leader Steve Scalise ended his bid for Speaker just a day after winning his conference's nomination to be the next House Speaker. I asked VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson about the surprise turn of events and what's next.
Oh, this was absolutely a surprise, even though throughout the day Thursday, you could sense that support from Scalise was slipping away, that he really just did not have the numbers, even when he went through that nomination process in the Republican conference meeting. He was telling everybody that he had at least 150 votes. He didn't even have that when he was nominated. And it was very clear that just there was always going to be this camp within the Republican Party in the U.S. House that would not allow him to ascend to the speakership post. So many people saying that he was just a repeat of Kevin McCarthy, the speaker who was removed from office last week. They said that he couldn't be counted on to negotiate the tough spending cuts with President Biden and that they would basically be electing Kevin McCarthy again. So Scalise came out, recognized that that support was never going to be there. He was never going to get to that magic number of 217 and really shocked everyone by withdrawing late on Thursday.
So, Catherine, what is the next step?
That is a very important question on Capitol Hill. By all reports, what is going to happen Friday afternoon is another candidate forum. Right now, the only declared candidate is conservative Republican Jim Jordan, but there certainly could be other candidates who step forward before that meeting this afternoon. Then they will hold, you know, talking about their viewpoints, their approaches to leadership, and then the Republican conference will once again vote and try to pick a clear nominee. But really, the way it is looking Friday morning on Capitol Hill, very, very divided Republican conference. I would be very surprised to see anyone garner enough votes that could get to a full House floor vote, where remember, all Democrats and Republicans have to vote, and the 212 Democrats are never going to vote for a Republican nominee unless there's some kind of power sharing agreement. And that's it, what we could be headed for. So really a historic couple of days coming up on Capitol Hill.
That was VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson. Polish voters face a stark choice in parliamentary elections set for October 15th, which are likely to have a significant impact not only on a deeply polarized Polish society, but also on the future of Europe as a whole. For more insight, I spoke with VOA Eastern Europe Bureau Chief Mirosława Gangadze, who is in Warsaw, Poland.
So it appears this is going to be a close race between the ruling right-wing Law and Justice Party and the opposition Civic Coalition for seats in the two-house, 460-member parliament. Is this a surprise?
It is indeed a very close race. The Civic Coalition trails the Law and Order and Justice Party by just several percentage points in the polls. The Law and Justice Party came to power in 2015, and they are governing Poland for 8 years. So it is very logical that a big part of the population is looking for change. The opposition is trying to galvanize its voters to come and vote to change the government. And the Civic Coalition bloc, headed by Donald Tusk, he's 66 and former president of the European Council and the former Polish prime minister, he pledged to revise the judiciary's amendment that Law and Justice Party proposed. He promised safeguard media independence and protect civil liberties. The Tusk coalition assert that it will work to restore Poland's international reputation as a democratic nation and rebuild its cooperative relationship with the EU, particularly with Germany, which has faced strong criticism from the current government in the recent months. At the same time, Law and Justice Party are claiming that they fulfilled their promises and are ready to govern one more term. That would be a very unique political situation to govern for three terms. From behind the scene by former Prime Minister Jaroslaw Kaczynski, he's 74 now, the party pledged to maintain traditional values and ensure the country's security, especially in the light of Russian aggression in neighboring Ukraine. The party leadership also aims to conclude a revamping of the Polish judiciary system, a process that started in 2019 and has been criticized by the EU as undermining judicial independence. The analysts say that most likely none of the political forces will be able to win outright, and they will have to form the coalition with smaller parties if they will enter the parliament.
That was VOA's Mirosława Gangadze speaking with me from Warsaw, Poland. And finally this week, a rare astronomical event called an annular solar eclipse will be taking place on Saturday, October 14th. This event is being called the Ring of Fire Eclipse. People in parts of the western U.S. and Central and South America are expected to lie within the path of a total eclipse, while those who are just outside of this trajectory will witness a partial eclipse. VOA's Rick Pantaleo spoke with Molly Wasser, NASA Planetary Science Digital Media Lead at the NASA Goddard Space Flight Center, about this unique celestial event.
Molly, this weekend there will be an annular solar eclipse. Why is it being called an annular solar eclipse, and what's the difference between it and a regular eclipse?
Yeah, so this weekend we have an annular eclipse, which occurs when the moon passes in between the Earth and the Sun, but the moon's apparent size is not large enough to completely cover the Sun. So what we see is the moon surrounded by a ring of fire, which is the Sun.
Can you tell us what we're going to see? What is this ring of fire?
The ring of fire is it's actually the outer portion of the Sun with the moon in the middle. So it's really cool. I work in planetary science, so it's a rare opportunity to see a new moon, which we usually don't get to see from Earth. So we'll see that new moon surrounded by the Sun. So it will look like a ring of fire.
For those who actually want to watch the eclipse for themselves, they are reminded of safety issues. How can viewers safely watch the annular eclipse?
Yeah, so it can be very tempting to look at an eclipse without any protection over your eyes because it's cool and it also is a little dimmer than the sun typically is. You know, you don't typically look at the sun directly, but on our website, go.nasa.gov/eclipse, we have a number of ways that you can safely view the sun. One is with solar eclipse glasses, which you can get at a library. You can also make a pinhole projector, and we have instructions for that on our website as well.
And finally, eclipses aren't just incredible events to witness. They're also scientifically valuable. What is the special science NASA is doing during the upcoming eclipses?
Yeah, so we are actually launching some sounding rockets this weekend to study changes in the Earth's atmosphere as the eclipse occurs. It will get a little cooler, a little dimmer, and we want to see how that impacts our atmosphere.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate you taking time to talk to us today. Molly Wasser, NASA Planetary Science Digital Media Lead at the NASA Goddard Space Flight Center. Thank you again.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's all the time we have this week. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thank you for listening. Join us next week for more Issues in the News. Until then, I'm Kim Lewis.